Roll the footage. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Simon Severino, your host, and this is the Sales Squad. Alex Lowe here, the guy I ask everything marketing, Mr. Marketeer Extraordinaire. And today we have a tough fight. Only one can win. Who will win? Is it? Should you sell by pitching or should you sell with zero pitch? Zero! Just asking questions. But Simon, that's boring. We will find out. There is only one winner. And we will cover the pros and cons. Because you are out there. You have so much to do. And you came to this episode to find out what's the best way to sell. Because selling is not easy. It takes time. The win rate can be low. It can be frustrating. And let's make it a little bit easier for you by sharing from the practice of Alex, who is coaching people on sales and marketing every single day since decades. So let's go. We start with position number one, selling by pitching. Stage is yours.
Okay. Well, selling via pitching, I think actually if we think about it, this is what most people do. This is generally what most people do. They might think they're selling via asking questions, but they're selling via pitching. Now, there's actually some good pros to be made for selling via pitching. So, for example, if you have a pitch, particularly if it's a good pitch, it's standardized. It's something you can roll out again and again. And often the thought that goes into a good pitch is the most valuable thing of all, because to come up with a good, solid pitch, you have to really think through your target market, the driving motivations, the USPs, that you have to go through all of this thinking process to really hone a crystal clear, solid pitch. So the actual work that goes into it can be really, really good. And a good pitch makes money. And also it has a lower skill level than selling by asking questions. Because if you have a good pitch that works, anybody can read the script, anybody can deliver it, and they can generate results. So those are definitely some of the pros to pitching. And if you have a good pitch, all you've got to do is pitch more often, right? It's like if you have a pitch that works, the more pitches you make, the more revenue you make. So it's a fairly simple equation. And it allows you to control the message as well. Because if everybody has the same pitch deck, if everybody pitches the same, you have total control over the message, the brand promise your business has, the messaging, and it can be delivered with enthusiasm. And it tends to work best when you have very simple benefits, simple, clear benefits to your product or service that you can articulate clearly, like no waffle, no jargon, good understanding, good journey, grab them with attention, move them emotionally through the benefits, and then give them a crystal clear call to action. Now, obviously, some of the cons of pitching is it lacks subtlety. You know, you can't always tailor it to the individual. Some of the things that you think of as benefits might be objections for the other person. So you might have to then handle objections that you created. Sometimes pitching can come across as a bit aggressive because it's like, listen to me, be quiet, let me talk. Let me talk to you, at you for a while. So it has to be handled with finesse. So I don't know, Simon, that's immediately what comes to mind. I think pitching sometimes gets a bad rap and we all think, oh, well, asking questions, the fine art. But let's not, you know, a good pitch is a good pitch. So there's definitely pros to it, I think. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Let's collect some terrible pitches and some good pitches. I was thinking, what's a good pitch? And usually it happens in marketing. It happens before. Mm. It happened a couple weeks before we are on the call. For example, a pitch that I love is Tesla's pitch, right? We are here to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. Boom, that's a pitch. Or, you know, Dropbox has a good pitch. I keep your files safe. Salesforce has a good pitch. Sell smarter and faster with the world's number one CRM. There are some pretty good pitches like Airbnb, make money, by leveraging the parts of your apartment that you don't use. That's a good pitch. But it doesn't happen in the sales call. It happens before.
So, yeah, definitely. It can. What you just pointed out, though, is because a good pitch can make or break a company. Because there have been companies that have really struggled until they managed to find a good pitch. And that comes from being able to really clearly state a uniqueness and benefits. Because as you said, like all those pitches there, simple, clear, and very easy to grasp. Yeah. And differentiates them. But you think of how long their teams, their marketing team, sales team must have gone around to actually come up with those pitches and how many of them fail before they hit the right pitch. Like, it's actually difficult. But as you say, like, it helps you stand out. A good pitch helps you. A good pitch does the selling before the salesperson actually gets on the phone.
Yes.
And so the people you speak to will in some ways be pre-sold because you've managed to articulate a good, solid pitch that compares you against your competitors.
Totally. So, for example, today I was on 4 podcasts of other people. Our team, Lou and Michelle, they sent upfront to the host Simon's speaking page. And there are 6 pitches there. One is maximize your return on luck. One is double your revenue in 90 days. It's literally 6 short pitches. And I don't know them. I don't know their audience, but they know their audience. And so usually in the first minutes, we come together. Hey, Simon, great to be on the show. In 2 minutes, we go live. By the way, please talk about doubling revenue in 90 days. So, but the amount after months of doing this, I have A/B tested 6 things and I know what resonates out there. So, and I know if 80% of people pick that one sentence, okay, let's go with that one. So this is how you can find your pitch and use your pitch in the marketing, in the positioning part, in the awareness part, in the engagement part.
Well, and as you said, they're developing different pitches for different audiences because like depending on who you're speaking to or the different aspects of your offer, it will require a different pitch, a different hook at least, a different hook to get them in there and their different evidence to support it. But then obviously that, you know, that widens your base. So in the awareness phase, certainly it's like, depending on who you're targeting and where they are, they're going to need a slightly different pitch or a slightly different hook. And that gives you the awareness thing because you have the awareness of your audience to be able to go, which of these is most appropriate to where they're at right now. And so obviously a lot of businesses don't think through that. They don't have different pitches. They have the one that they keep on like using again and again, regardless of where they are. So I think that's an important point for people to kind of get is like have different pitches depending on your products and your audience and tailor it to. And this then moves more into that sales thing we're going to talk about the questioning because it moves more into the bespoke tailored approach, but it still is an actual a pitch.
And I am thinking, the thing I recently bought, did I buy them because of a pitch that brand had or for other, do I even remember the pitch of the last 5 things that I bought? I can't even remember the pitch. I bought it because in that moment, I felt this is the right thing that will solve a specific task at hand. Mm. So sometimes the pitch is not even very important. Specifically, the higher the ticket, the more I want to feel that it's the right thing at the right moment.
Well, that's the key thing, I think. A good pitch is powerful in the moment, but invisible afterwards. Like, you're never going to say, I bought because of the pitch. Because if a pitch is really good, you make a decision. And once you've made the decision, you're not thinking about the pitch, you're thinking about what you've been pitched, you're thinking about the journey afterwards. So in a sense, it's kind of like a good pitch is something that is really strong in the moment that you get it, but then once you've heard it, you forget about it because you're moved on somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, like we can put a lot of time and effort into creating a really good pitch, and then in a sense, like nobody's going to be, except at certain award ceremonies in the marketing world, nobody's going to give you a trophy for a pitch. They might give you money, but they're going to be doing that afterwards. So yeah, that's quite an important point, isn't it? Good pitches tend to be invisible.
So you have now some reasons why you should A/B test a pitch, but on the, and how to actually do it. Have 5-6 lines, give them as an option, check their reaction, check the resonance of your market, and then go with the winners. But you have also the negative sides that actually nobody wants to get pitched, especially if it's a visible pitch. Nobody wants to get pitched, actually. Let's look at the other side of things. Can you sell without any pitch? So there was some positioning in the marketing stage, in the awareness stage, but now they are on your call. And, you know, I'm having 3, 4, 5 sales calls every day. If I think what I'm doing there, there is no pitch. I have a set of questions. They are in a specific order of 8 topics. And the first one, you know, they landed on my calendar. I go, hi, what brought you here? What's the reason we are talking in this moment? And what is your hope? So that's really the first question, right? Why now and why are we talking? What brought you here? And what I like to do is to visualize what they're saying, because you cannot know what I'm hearing and if I'm seeing you and hearing you if you don't see it. So I visualize that. And then the second set of questions is around what frustrates them right now. Because the world has a limited interest in time. So if I am watching my kids playing the flute on a stage, the very moment they go off stage and the next kid is there, I am bored to death. I want to go. Yeah. So you have to find out which of them is their kid. And don't waste their time with the rest, right? So that's the frustration part. Which of all the topics that they came from, which one is actually their kid, right? And let me share all the other questions too after one word from our sponsors. What if your business would run well even when you are on vacation? Discover how 1,600 business owners have regained their freedom using the Strategy Sprints blueprints. How they enjoy living their dream and watching their business scale. Get the exact checklists they use to go from stressed to fulfilled using the Strategy Sprints method. Order your copy of Strategy Sprints 12 Ways to Accelerate Growth for an Agile Business on Amazon today. And if you love it, leave us a review. For more information, head over to strategysprints.com. So the first question was, what brought you here and what's your hope? The second one is, okay, and what is most relevant to discuss? So you are trying to find out which one is their kid. Even if you can solve 7 problems, find the one that's their kid for this conversation, right? Where is the most energy in this moment, in this conversation? Because the product is not in the room. Only the conversation is in the room. That's why you have to focus on the conversation. And then from 1 to 10, how important is this? In step 3, I check the importance. Because if it's not important enough, it changes the conversation. Then what happens if nothing happens? Because there is always one alternative for them that is just doing nothing. The status quo is always a viable alternative. Another viable alternative is they do it on their own or they do it with somebody else. So explore all alternatives. They might hire Mike the intern to do it, or a full-time person to do it, or they might go with another agency. Oh, interesting. Which agencies are you looking at? So all alternatives. And then step 5, I ask about the deliverable. So if we work together, what's the scope of work? what would be three goals for the next 90 days? I'm quite specific on this because that's the cycle of our work. But whatever the cycle of your work is, the scope, because if you don't define that, you will have scope creep later on. So I ask about the scope. We call it the deliverables for 90 days. And 90 days because it's doable. You can plan and execute stuff in 90 days. It has the right amount of urgency and energy, but also there is a clear end. Step six is, okay, what do you plan to invest in terms of time investments and monetary investment? And then seventh is, when would you like to start? And eight is, now that I am showing you here the statement of work, do you agree on this and would you like to sign it now? Those are the main questions that I ask. But we also get sales recordings, like you and I and Glenn, we get a ton of sales recordings and we watch them. And so what we see happening is sometimes, hello, welcome to this call. Can I tell you for 10 minutes what our company is about?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's I think what you're highlighting there to me is the difference between your pitch versus their pitch. So like what you're extracting from them when you're talking about the frustrations and you're making it visual, you're co-creating their unique pitch. Because it's like, essentially it's like you're getting them to pitch themselves. So I think when we're talking about pitching, obviously the way you do it there with the subtleties that you put into it, that's essentially what we're doing, isn't it? Because then there's no, how do you create an irresistible offer? Well, you take out anything that could cause resistance. What causes resistance? Anything that's not theirs. So to create an irresistible offer, you extract out what's their offer. What's irresistible to them? Because they're not going to resist their own words, their own thinking, their own plan. And so then you're just ratifying, is what we've co-created, is what you've told me, does that work? And then you're obviously going to get a yes because they've created it or you've co-created it together. So in talking about pitching, yes, having your own pitch that's extracted from client conversations or that's extracted from good thinking, that can be useful definitely to attract and engage and in some cases convert. But this is obviously much more bespoke because you're removing all the resistance because it's them. So yeah, I think that just kind of teases out the subtlety of kind of what you've just presented there.
And so if I ask these things in this order, the win rate is pretty high. And if I skip some of them, the win rate is low. Now, sometimes you can do all of them and still you get concerns. Some people call them objections, right? I think it's valuable concerns. Like, yeah, maybe yes, but not right now. Or maybe I don't have the right team. What if it doesn't work for me? So in this case, some people say, now you have to pitch, right? Because now you have to show them results, show them case studies. I prefer to ask questions also here. Say, okay, tell me, what would you need to see for this to be a better fit in the future? When should we reconvene to double check that the situation has changed? So it's a set of, I think having a set of questions makes you really strong in sales and you lead by asking. And the quality of your questions also creates immediate trust or the opposite. So sometimes people say, yeah, but I'm in B2B, it takes me 18 months to create a trust in the relationship. I have the experience that if you ask one or two questions in the right moment, you are showing your expertise and showing your degree of immersion and intimacy with their world that gives them immediate trust. Sometimes I have to buy, I don't know, a bike, and I have no ideas of bikes, and I go to three shops. One guy there asks me one question, and I go, whoa, he knows exactly that when I sit on it, then the length of my legs will have impact on this and on that. I was checking for the colors of the bike, but he looks at things that show me he's totally immersed. He has people on bikes here all the time, knows exactly the friction points, and he's asking me three questions. And I go, all right, you won. I will buy the bike from you. Whatever bike you bring me, I will buy it from you because I trust you. I see that you are asking the right questions.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, questions give you power in that sense, don't they, as you say? Because it's not what you say, it's what they say. And so if you're asking questions and getting them to explain, like, you know, do you think that's a good fit? Yes, but why do you think that? And then they have to explain it. And explaining to you, they have to explain to themselves. Mm-hmm. And so that is their pitch. They're pitching themselves. And that's what gives it the power. Because as you said, like, it's a good way to figure out, because the person will disqualify themselves if they're not a good fit. Like, you don't have mm-hmm. to. You just have to sit powerful with the question. And as you said, like, a good question, sometimes like a good question at the right moment, it really makes you think, it really makes you go, oh, wow. And that's the power, because then that's better than having credentials on the wall. If you have the power of having good questions, as you say, people will give you an authority because it's like, that's a fantastic question. Wow, that makes me stop in my tracks. That makes me think. And it helps people get that clarity on what's the decision that's best going to serve them. And as you said, even if you get objections, even if they have to go through some necessary thinking in their head, think through some concerns, if you're asking them good quality questions, you're helping them to make a good quality decision. And there's very few times in life when we actually get the chance to make a really good quality decision. So no, there's a tremendous, tremendous power in that.
And it's hard to find the opposite argument. Now, what's the negative argument about just questions? Oh, it's just questions. He doesn't know anything. He's just asking because he doesn't know anything. Well, if that's the case and you're actually like making it up on the spot and just asking, I had this experience too. In my line of work, there are a ton of people that just ask questions. So, hey, what should I do? What do you think you should do? Come on! That's what I said. I'm asking you.
Yeah.
So, yes. Sometimes if the only plan is asking questions, but there is no immersion, there is no expertise, there is no moment when they say, no, this is wrong, this is right. Mm-hmm. Look, and then that might be the situation where just having questions, well, might not be giving the other side a lot of trust and the reason to buy. But how do you know that? Well, you know that because the questions, they feel different. It feels like an open loop. Instead of you moving forward towards your best decision and more clarity on what you need to solve, it's kind of going in circles. That's my best case against the questions argument.
Yeah, I think it comes down to skill, doesn't it? Because obviously if you're asking questions, the skill you have to have is having the questions, asking them, listening to what the response is and guiding the conversation. And sometimes I think they might agree, like sometimes you have to ask questions that might even be challenging. And that's also a skill, is knowing when to ask those questions, because sometimes people might not always, you get the sense that they're talking, but they're not actually sharing the real stuff. And so sometimes you have to have the skill and the elegance to just go a few levels deeper. You know, I sense there's something else, would you mind sharing? But all of that's a skill set. I mean, obviously, like, it's a skill set that's well worth mastering, so that you don't have to rely just on the cookie cutter pitches. But also, if the person isn't willing, if the person isn't engaged, if they're not giving good answers, potentially that's a red flag right there, and that saved you some time, because maybe there isn't a fit and you can end the conversation. So the downsides to the cons to the questioning approach is literally just skill based. And at least a skill based con means there's an easy solution: get skilled. And it doesn't take that much time, you know, if you have a good trainer like yourself, you know.
Yes, and I think whatever you are offering, you need a process. You need a plan and a process behind what you will deliver, because then that will make sure that you are not just going in circles and asking back all the time. But at some point, you will progress and say, all right, we have clarified this. Now let's move on to this. Now we've clarified this. Let's move on to this. So you feel like there is a process in this. They're not just making it up on the spot and trying to surf a wave, but they are actually walking with me towards where I need to be and to go next. It's getting tough. Who will win the race? We move to the verdict.
Well, I mean, there have been some good arguments on both sides. I think the definite winner, I think that the definite answer is that you need a bit of both. Like, you need a good pitch to maybe bring people in and engage them, but then obviously you need to be able to ask good questions, particularly to sell high tickets. So I think the clear winner here has been the asking questions, but that doesn't mean that there's no place for pitching. It just means everything has to be balanced in its own time and place. But this actually certainly was closer than I thought it would be, because there's good arguments on both sides. But I do think it's worth taking the time to actually build the skill set of learning to ask good questions and take people on the journey that you outlined, Simon, because that really is where the magic is. That's when you can pitch people without resistance, because you're helping them to create their own pitch. So that's my verdict. I think questioning wins this round.
Yeah. Yes, I resonate with that. And I am thinking sometimes I have even some mini pitches prepared, but I only pull them when I get asked. For example, I have all these buttons here in front of me. I can push a button, there is an image popping up. Independently, if I'm in Zoom or Teams or wherever I am, without screen sharing, I can pop up an image right here, right now. And so I have, for example, 6 or 7 case studies from 7 industries. So I don't come with that. But sometimes people ask me in a conversation, hey, Simon, have you ever worked with the financial sector? Have you ever had a marketing agency sprinting? Click. And I have exactly that. Oh, I'm glad that you're asking. Let me see. Click. And I have it right there. It's that person from that industry saying, I did a sprint and this is what happened. So that's kind of a pitch, but it's not felt as a pitch because it's exactly what they asked. And so you're answering in a visual way. And so I have multiple of these things prepared just in case. Or for example, Simon, if I would send you a referral, who should I refer to you? Click, and I have the JV one pager, which says this is the ideal referral. And that's is the 5 things that make an ideal referral. So we can bring in pitch elements in a conversation in an elegant way, in a way that it's in flow, it's not interrupting the flow of the conversation, maybe even enhancing the flow of the conversation. But that's the clear winner. Ask questions, everyone. And if you run out of questions, talk to Alex. Alex is the man, the marketeer extraordinaire. He has so many questions. And we will be back every week, same time, because the Sales Squad is fun for us. So we will do this regularly. Next week, the topic is, should I optimize for max short-term revenue right now? Let's get more cash into the system. Or should I maximize for winning forever? The long game, market shares and market dominance over the long term. What should I do? We will explore this next week. If you have any questions and you want to ask our questions, you find us on LinkedIn at Simon Severino, on X at Simon Severino. Alex, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, people can go to X, Alex Lowe Deman. He'll see me. You'll see me with my marketing banner. And happy to have any conversations.
Perfect. Thank you, Alex. It was inspiring again, and see you next week.
See you guys.